So I start each week as they do these studies, and I'm always like, I read it through, and I like do it, come up with an outline, okay, and what am I going to say this week? But then as you just keep digging and looking at it, it's just amazing what the text continues to yield for us. So another wonderfully structured kind of chapter here, and we see how it's put together. Okay, so someone read the first five verses for me, please.
They had just gone out of the city and were not far off when Joseph said to his house steward, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks and which he is indeed uses for divination? You have done wrong in doing this.
Okay, thank you, Danae. So, as typical in Genesis, we the readers always get a preview. Okay, so you see this pattern over and over again in Genesis. We get a preview of what's happening, but we have to remember that the participants don't know what's going on. So we get this preview, okay, and we're clued in from the outset. In verses 1 to 2, Joseph sets a trap. Okay, he sets a trap. Now, what does he do? What's the trap? Don't look at me. It's right there in the text.
The cup and the money.
Yeah, okay. Put the cup and the money. All right. Now, that was too easy, right? Okay. But again, he again returns the money, right? And he places the cup. This is the different thing in Benjamin's bag this time. Okay? Now, note the steward's complicity in the plot. Okay? The steward knows what's going on here. This will become important as we get a little later in the story, okay? But the steward has been complicit in this all along, and again, we see the trust that he has. At first light, the brothers are sent off, but I have to say that as I think and start through this, one thing kind of really troubles me at the outset, all right? So they've been loaded up, they sent them off in the morning. Does anything bother you about that? What comes to mind?
Well, usually I would load myself up.
Yeah, okay. And in loading yourself up, what would you do?
I would make sure everything checked out before I left.
You'd make sure everything checked out before you left. And based upon what happened last time, what do you think you might have checked out?
Your bags,
yeah. Right? So it's interesting. Obviously, we know it's God, right? Okay. So why don't they check their sacks this time out? All right? Why don't they? I mean, they know what happened last time. It's, of course, divinely intended, but what other option, why else do you think they might not have checked in their sacks this time? Yeah.
They might be thinking that, you know, Joseph's going to think, he's going to remember what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get out of Dodge as quick as we can.
Okay, that's a good one. I didn't think about that one. Yeah, they're fat, dumb, and happy. We just had a big party the night before. We didn't get in trouble. Let's get out of here.
Hungover.
Yeah, okay. Jack, you said hungover. I got that one on the list. Jack?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I think you guys have all captured it, and I'll add Pat's to it. Maybe they were just hungover, all right, because it said they were having a big party, okay? They were drinking a lot of wine, but more likely they had been lulled into a false sense of confidence, right? They thought they were going to be treated like criminals when they were brought in to see Joseph, who they just know as the lord of the land, but in reality they got treated like what?
Royalty.
Absolutely right, okay? So, I mean, they are lulled. They think, man, no, just think about, you know, I know none of us have sin, we've never confessed, but just in case you have, in case there's something that's lurking in there, you know, we do great work to cover it, first of all, right? And then as soon as we think we've gotten away with it, what do? And then, of course, what does God do? Oh, I'm going to have to wake you up and remind you that you're going to have to get that out on the table. But the fact of the matter is, they were lulled into it. They thought they were. And I think Pat's got some truth to his point, which is, man, we better get out of here. They're going. It's good. Let's go. before something else happens, okay? But nevertheless, it's just kind of one of those things that struck me. And I try to put myself in the situation. You know, what would I have done or what would I have been thinking? And that's one of the things I would have. So I suspect Joseph knew this, okay? That's the final test, okay? That they've been lulled into confidence is the thing that he knew. Now, no sooner than they left the city, right, Joseph springs the trap. All right, so as opposed to last time, it says, what did it say? You know, as soon as they got outside the city limits. So he arms his steward with these two questions, right? Question is, first question is, why do you return evil for good? Okay, that's kind of a general question. And then secondly, more specifically, why have you stolen my cup? Okay, so now we have a specific charge, kind of a general attitude about them. Why are you guys always returning evil for good? And specifically, why have you taken this cup? Now, does Joseph's use of divination seem strange? It says he uses this cup for divination. Seems strange? Yeah, okay, that's the right answer. I'd bob my head this way. Yeah, so yeah. So why does he say it? Why does he say this? Why is it there? Bobby.
Still identifying with the Egyptians?
Yeah, absolutely right. Nailed it. I gotta stop putting these notes up early. You figured out I put the notes up early or something? You guys can see them? Exactly right. That's a tough one. I think it's to maintain his cover, right? Because they still think he is. Yeah, Pat.
I think the steward is also saying that so that they realize how important this cup is to Joseph.
Yeah, could be. Just kind of setting the hook deeper, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, you've taken something very special, right? Why would you do that? But I think primarily thing is to maintain his cover here. He's continuing to, you know, act and behave as an Egyptian, right? Okay, so the Egyptians did use water divination. It was a well-known thing in their time. And basically how it worked is they would take some container that was clear or something they could look into. They would pour pure fresh water into it. And they would put different contaminants, usually minerals, either flakes of gold or silver and different things like that. And then they would look and see how the water reacted based upon some kind of rules, or maybe they'd see how the sunlight hit it. And from that, they would come up with some set of, well, this is what's going to happen. Okay, so it's a well-known practice at that point in time. But what's interesting about the charge, okay? So what's interesting about the charge, right? Basically, the charge is, why did you take the cup? So what's interesting about that? What's not there in the charge?
That they know that it's there.
Well, no, but what's not there in the charge? Jack?
The money.
Yeah, no mention of the money. Okay? So the money has become incidental. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, so they thought that was the big deal first time around. Money's back, I'm sure. Okay, but no mention of the money. So I think they, you know, again, the brothers should have been getting some clues along the way, right? So there's none of that kind of stuff, none of those questions. Why doesn't he ask us about the money? Right? That's probably what they would have thought about more than a cup. Okay? All right, so I'm going to read verses 6 to 13.
And he overtook them, and he spake unto them these same words. And they said unto him, wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that my servants should do according to this thing. Behold the money which we found in our sacks' mouths, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver or gold? With whomsoever of my servants it be found, but let him die, and we also will be in my Lord's bondmen. And he said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground, and opened every man his sack. And he searched, and began at the eldest, and left at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they rent their clothes, and laid every man his ass, and returned to the city.
Okay, so now we have, yeah.
What version was he reading?
King James, probably. Is that a King James? Yeah. The king ain't on it, the king ain't in it. I mean, that's the authorized version. So he's the most spiritual guy in the room back there. Yeah, that's the King James. So whenever you hear the untos and the these and the thous and so forth, it is actually kind of fun to read it sometimes. You know, it's got a nice quality to it. Okay, so the proceedings are going to go along here in five quick stages, okay? First in verse 6, we're going to see the pursuit. Then in verse 7, I didn't mean to come up with peace, by the way. I wasn't killing myself on this. It just worked out that way. The pursuit, the protest in verses 7 and 8, then this big proclamation that they make in verse 9, Okay, the penalty in verse 10, and then the perpetrator is identified in verses 11 through 13. Okay, so boom, 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 kind of a quick thing. So this is the proceedings or what's going on. Now, as instructed, the steward sets out and confronts the brothers. Okay, now, how do the brothers go about protesting their charge in verse 7 and 8? What is their defense? How do they protest it?
They brought back the money from the previous time.
Okay, so that would be...
trying to be honest here.
Okay, right. So they're trying to use logic, right? That's kind of a logical response. Look, we brought the money back last time. Why would we do something like this? Okay, that's one. What else did they do? What are they doing in verse 7?
Good question.
Yeah, it's kind of blustering, right? The first reaction is incredulity. Far be it from us to do anything like this. We're good guys. We don't do anything wrong. Okay, so they just kind of, you know, I think they are shocked, okay? I mean, I think they are genuinely surprised about this charge. But it's kind of the first response is, you know, incredulity. You know, why would we do this? It doesn't make any sense. And then, as Betty mentioned, as you move into verse 8, they kind of move forward with logic, right? So why would we do it? So probably genuine is what I say. Okay, why would we do such a thing? But second, in verse 8, they offer this kind of logical defense. Okay, hey, you know, we brought the money back last time. Why would we do something silly like steal one cup? Right, in their mind, they don't know anything about this cup. They don't know anything about divination. They don't know whether it's valuable or invaluable type of thing. So we go through the process. Now, what do they do next? What do they do next? What do they do next in verse 9? Right. So what is that? What are they? What would we call that in biblical terms? What they're doing? They're making a vow. Okay. They are making a rash vow. Okay. Whomever it is found with, he shall die, and the rest of us will be servants. Okay. So they're really, you know, we'll get to that in just a second. Now, can you think of another Old Testament example? You read through types, you know of one. Okay, Jack?
There's one of your king who said, thus and so happens, the first thing that walks out,
yeah,
the house will die.
Yeah, okay. So you got to back up from a K to a J. That would be a judge. And his name starts with a J. Jephthah, right? Remember Jephthah? Okay, so turn back to Judges 11, Judges chapter 11. Okay, so Jephthah was one of the judges, right? There were seven judges, seven cycles of apostasy, oppression, and deliverance by God in this book of Judges, right? As they keep spiraling downhill. Joshua, Judges, chapter 11. In verse 29, we have Jephthah, who is last one before Samson, I think. Okay, so 11:29, we hear this. Jephthah's tragic vow. Now the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah so that he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and then he passed through Mizpah and Gilead, and from Mizpah to Gilead he went on to the sons of Ammon. Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering. Now, who is the first one, or what is the first thing that came through the door?
His daughter.
His daughter. Now, that probably was a pretty sinking feeling, right? Can you imagine that? So it was a rash vow. Well, these guys are making a rash vow, okay? They are so convinced of their innocence, right? They're going to do something dramatic to do that. Now, it starts to get really interesting from here. Verse 10 seems to be contradictory, right? So just look at it, and what do you think is happening there? What's going on in verse 10? Right, so he said, now let it be according to your words. So he's saying, okay. Sounds like he's saying, okay, great, I accept your vow. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and the rest of you shall be innocent. Well, that's not what they said. Okay, so what's going on there?
I mean, he's kind of turning the tables on and kind of resetting the
Right. So why does he? Why do you think he's changing the deal?
Maybe that's the ultimate.
No, yeah, just think of the logic. You're getting ahead of it. I mean,
he's not killing anybody.
Right. Okay. He's not killing anybody. Okay. He knows where the goblet is, right? And I think he probably divines, if you will, use that word correctly, what Joseph wants. Okay. So it's a little bit of an unfair question because it is tricky Hebrew. Basically, what I would paraphrase it would be this way. He's basically saying, yes, as you say, there will be consequences. Okay, so he's acknowledging that there'll be consequences for what they have done. Okay, but here's what they're going to be. Okay, I'm going to set the terms of those consequences. You're not going to set the terms of the consequences. So we kind of already got to this. Why does the steward modify the punishment? And clearly because he knows the cup is in Benji's sack. I couldn't get it all in one line, so I had to go with the Benji. Okay, so it is in Benjamin's sack. Okay, and obviously he knows that it's not his Joseph's intention for them to be held. So just like with Jephthah, he did indeed sacrifice the daughter, right? And they would have been held to this vow, and it would have been hard for Joseph to kind of work his way out of that if he let that go. Did you have a question, or Jane? No, just waving at me. Okay.
Hi.
Good to see you. Okay, so it implied that he did not that. So, rather, to bait the brothers to reveal their hearts. Now, what does verse 11 suggest about the brothers' mindset? What does it suggest about where their minds still are as we read verse 11?
They're innocent.
Yeah, okay. They are convinced that they are innocent. And they're eager to prove that, right? Because what do? They quickly get the sacks back on the ground and say, go ahead, check out our luggage. We know we didn't do anything, okay? So they're pretty convinced of their innocence, so they hurry to lower their sacks. Now, try to put yourself in the situation. Even though you think you're innocent, how do you think you'd be feeling, right? Because it says what they do. They're starting from the oldest, and he's moving down to the youngest. So how do you think you'd be feeling? You know, what would be going on inside of you in this kind of situation if you were one of the brothers?
I hope it's not Benjamin's.
Yeah, right. You know, bottom line is tension. Tension, tension, you know, and it's just, I mean, just the mastery of the text, right? You know, he starts with the oldest. What's in this little biggie's bag? And you start going down. They got 10 of them to go through, right? You're like, ah. So every time the bag gets open, they're like, ah. You know, they're just moving down that whole process until they get to Benjamin, right? Now, when they get to Benjamin, I bet you they were elated, right? Why? Why do you think they were elated?
No way could be Benjamin.
Absolutely right. He's the good kid. There's no way that Benjamin would have stole this. Yeah, Bobby.
I don't get how every time they opened the sack, they saw the money.
Well, but what was the charge? Remember, he didn't charge for the money.
Whoever put the money in here, put the cup in.
Well, I understand, but we know the story ahead of time. They've willingly overlooked. They've probably figured, well, the money, the guy just is intent upon giving us our money back. I agree, but it was.
Don't you think, though, I mean, with the first experience, the steward basically told them, hey,
right.
I did that.
Right.
So while, yes, they were probably surprised to see it again,
right.
There was precedence for the money being in the sacks.
Right.
But not the cup.
Right. So I don't think the money was a surprise, okay, because of the precedence, as he said. Before it was that. But I know that. Bobby, I'm not arguing with you. You're right. It's in there. I'm just trying to think through what they might have been thinking in the process, okay? In their mind, the money was no big deal at this point in time. But obviously, I mean, they are concerned as they go down this process. But they've gone through the 10, you know, bad brothers. And at this point, they're probably like, oh, man, this is great. We're going to be vindicated. We'll be on back home, and we have our money.
This is one of the most, if you've ever seen the actual play that they've done on this. This is one of the most dramatic
is it?
Times in the play.
Yeah.
Because the brothers are so related, and then it's like,
bam!
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think. Danae?
I think that the stupor that Joseph told him to do put his cup in Benjamin's bag, but Benjamin didn't notice to open his bag till they got home.
Right.
And then when they got to Benjamin, the cup was in his sack. But otherwise, Joseph said put so much food for them to eat.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like good thinking.
I'm a little surprised. I mean, after the first trip, when the money mysteriously shows up in their bags, you would think them, when they were accused of stealing this cup, that they'd think, okay, we already know that there's something screwy with this group of people.
Right.
You know, and so there's certainly a possibility that the cup could have mysteriously showed up in our bags. It's almost like God kind of closed their mind, you know, so they didn't think to check their bags.
That's one idea. Clearly, God's sovereign, okay, so we know that's going to be true. But what about the idea of the deceitfulness of sin?
Yeah.
Okay, think about it. I mean, we've all done it. You know, you start to believe you're not going to be accountable for something.
Yeah.
You know, oh, he's missed this one. Oh, I got by with this one. He's overlooked that one. No, I mean, you see their arrogant self-will in this process. So you continue to see, this is what Joseph is trying to dig out. Mm-hmm. Where are these guys' hearts? Do they truly get it? Are they repentant for the sin in their heart? Because you're never going to have genuine reconciliation unless there's repentance, right? Mark has taught on this a ton. The sinned against party, its responsibility is to what? What do we do? The sinned against party, the one who is sinned against.
Forgive.
And what is the definition of forgiveness, as he said? Releasing the debt.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, are you reconciled at that point?
No.
No.
Right? So what do? What's the next person? What's the next step? Pursue the sinner.
Right?
Take the to the person. Mm-hmm. Right? If they confess, what does it say in Matthew 5? You've won a brother. Okay? It's all good. But oftentimes they don't. Right? So
unrepentant sin can blind you.
Absolutely.
To reality.
Look at
truth.
Look at David in 2 Samuel chapter 11. Right? I mean, he committed adultery, he took what wasn't his, he killed his general. I mean, he broke half of the Ten Commandments. Right? Literally.
The deeper you get into it, the blinder you become.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think those are great implications that you're bringing up.
And making bad choices.
Yeah, but I just like the simple words, the deceitfulness of sin.
Mm-hmm.
Sin is, by definition, a lie. It's deceitful. It's going to take you down that path. And the more that you don't do that, Anne, read this.
Well, I was just going to say, if thinking about when you said before, putting yourself into the, here are these 10 brothers, and they know that if, they've got to get out of Dodge with Benjamin, or they've got their dad to deal with when they
mm-hmm.
get home.
Yeah. So look, Bobby and Betty, you're both right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but we're looking at this from the outside in, and we're clean, right? At least
hopefully.
On this one. On this one.
Yeah.
You can deal with yourselves on the other stuff, whatever you're not clean about. That's up to you. But we're clean on this one, all right? So, yeah, we look at it, how come they don't get it? Well, how come you don't get it when you're harboring sin in your heart and it's sitting there? All right? Very, very good. Yeah, Matthew.
Just a question. How do we absolve Joseph from the deception? Because he knew this was all a setup. And he tells his guys to go out there and make these accusations. So I wonder what that says about him and his confidence in all of this.
Yeah, I don't absolve them is the answer I would say. I think we have to recognize God's sovereignty in that, and I know you know that, right? But, I guess in the context of what I just went through, where I would absolve him is in that he's generally pursuing reconciliation. Now, we may not like the term, right? We may think it's kind of deceitful in terms of how he's doing it, but maybe Joseph recognizes that he has to do something pretty dramatic to shake these guys out of their hard-heartedness. So he resorts to it. I would say it's something like this, and this is another one I don't have an answer to, but if you have an answer to it, I'd be curious what your thoughts are. It's kind of like the idea of a white lie, right? You ever told a white lie? Honey, does this dress make me look whatever? how do you answer that question? Carefully. But so Matthew, do you have any thoughts on that? I would agree with you second.
I just know that, well, we know from the word.
Right.
We beyond that, it becomes speculation, and it becomes dicey when we start throwing these things out. It's great to use our noodles
right.
to piece things together.
Right.
But our confidence can't be in our ability to do that apart from the truth of God's word.
Yeah, and part of our confidence right now is we know what the story, the rest of the story is, as Paul Harvey says. So, and we know what he's going to do, and we know those words that Joseph's going to say, right? You know, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. You know, far be it from me, what, to judge, okay? But, yeah, you're right. I mean, if I follow my rules, which I pick on at 44, you'd have to say, hey, you know, what's Joseph doing here, too?
Pragmatic.
Yeah. So he's going through it. Yeah, Bib.
Well, I was thinking, since Joseph is a type of Messiah, in a way, you know, we were given tests, the disciples were given tests, so I see it kind of as a test. I don't want to water it down, because Matthew's right. I mean, he's sovereign, we don't know, but I can see that, you know, Jesus asked disciples questions that he knew the answer to, and tried to see where their faith was.
Yeah, well, I'm okay with, no, it's not a stretch. I want to be careful with type versus foreshadowing. Okay, we've been through that, foreshadowing. But certainly where I thought you were going to go with that is maybe this is also God testing Joseph as well. Okay, continuing to test his heart. And what is he going to be when he comes out in the process as well? So, yeah, it's complicated. I think it's fun to think through these. I'm not trying to suggest that these are definitive answers. Okay, but it's kind of sanctified speculation, if you will. If we go through the process, okay? So, I think it is interesting to think about what's going on with Joseph. Certainly, most of the energy would be on the brothers at this point in time in the narrative, but, you know, we shouldn't forget Joseph in the process. Okay, so birth order. So, in doing so, the tension and their confidence builds, and then the reveal, right? Okay? Which must have felt like a dagger in their hearts. Now, what's interesting about the collective response in verse 13? What's interesting about their response in verse 13?
The tearing of their clothes.
Okay, so the first thing you can see is that there is genuine grief. Okay, so for the first time you see out of these brothers some genuine grief. That was the method. You tear your clothes, toss it in dust and ashes. Okay, so there was a genuine grief in it being discovered with Benjamin. So you begin to see a little bit of softening in their hearts. Now, what else about their response is interesting? Yeah, Bobby.
At that point, couldn't they have just gone on their way? Because he said they weren't going to be, just the one who took the cup was going to be a slave, but they went back to the city with him.
Yeah, hold on to that thought, because this is why the test is so perfect. Okay? This is why the test is so perfect. Okay? So, yeah. So total resignation. There's no pushback at all, even from Benjamin. Now, Benjamin might be like a deer in the spotlight at this point, right? He hadn't been around with these brothers before, and now he's seeing all this stuff come up. Okay? And then finally, we see solidarity. Okay? So they all react as one. This starts to get to some of these things that you're bringing up, Bobby. But there's one more thing that's kind of interesting about their response. What doesn't happen in this response?
They don't argue.
They don't argue, and specifically in what way? They don't what?
Innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't blame each other. They don't blame each other, or they question Benjamin, right? So there's no argument, right? Benjamin? Really? You know, I mean, there's no argument, there's no questioning, there's no nothing, there's no blame. So again, you're seeing this progression, I think, of their hearts as they're moving more towards where they want to be in the process. All of this suggests what? The beginning of the fruit of real heart change and repentance from the brothers, okay? So you're kind of seeing this process as God's moving it along, and you're seeing some change in how they have done. Okay, so I'm going to read verses 14 to 17.
When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" And Judah said, "What shall we say to my lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my lord's servants, both we and he also, in whose hand the cup has been found. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father."
Okay, so So they appear in court, okay? They're brought in before Joseph. He's the court, the judge. In today's terminology, how would you express their action upon appearing before the judge? Kind of what is his first, how does he kind of handle it? He's brought before the judge. They know they've been caught red-handed. Kind of how does he proceed once he gets before Joseph? What might you call it today? If you're in a court today and you're guilty, what can you do? There you go. He throws himself on the mercy of the court. He says, I got nothing. Okay? Throws himself on the mercy of the court. So he doesn't start arguing right away. So Joseph begins with these two questions, right? What have you done? And don't you know I can practice divination? So the first question is straightforward. Again, what's the point of the second question? Don't you know I can practice divination?
He's still hiding his identity.
Yeah, I think he's still primarily hiding his identity, okay? He doesn't actually practice it, okay? And the reason I would say that is because it seems like he's already got a pretty good pipeline, right? In terms of prayer and being spoken to by the Lord in the process. Rather, again, he's concealing himself. And I think he's also kind of saying through this, do you think you really could have gotten away with this, guys? So now you kind of get back to Matthew's question again, right? Which is a fair question, which is, you know, isn't Joseph being a little unfair, right? Because he set him up in the process, but you got to kind of wrestle with that issue. In other words, it's an emphatic question. Now, what does Judas' response in verse 16 tell you about his heart condition? What does it tell you about his heart condition? Before we get to that, though, kind of already did.
Kind of somewhat broken, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, what'd you say? Yeah, I think broken's the word that was kind of, he's finally been brought to the end of himself, and he is at the end of himself. And we see that basically by this throwing himself on the mercy of the court, right? He basically just goes through and asks three simple questions, right, of complete resignation. So in today's vernacular, you'd say, I got nothing, right? I got nothing. You know, you got me, I'm done. So he's broken. He has truly been brought to the end of himself. No more games, no more tricks, no more questions, no more appeals to these kind of things, or no more kind of defenses. So he's demonstrating genuine penitence, I think, versus remorse, and it's marked by a true sorrow and contrition over his sin. Now, the bigger question here is, what does iniquity refer to in verse 16? It says, God has found out our iniquity. So what's he referring to? What iniquity is he referring to? Let me see. God has found out the iniquity of your servants.
I think he's referring back to Joseph being sold into slavery.
What I think doesn't matter. What do you think?
it's possible.
Yeah, okay. So one option is he's referring back to what? Being found out on their selling?
Yeah, what they did to Joseph.
Okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's certainly an option. Another option is he's just referring to the present iniquity, right? Okay, now, I believe he is referring to the prior iniquity, okay, but how do I prove that? Are there any textual clues I can use to prove that?
Well, first of all, he's confessing for the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
So he's confessing an iniquity that the whole group performed,
okay.
Except for Benjamin.
Okay, so
where the cup thing, only Benjamin was being accused.
So the group. Where do you get that? You're right, but how would you? What would you point to in the text and say?
Well, it's
the iniquity of our
servants, plural, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the first statement. What can we?
All right. So you're seeing plural language. Okay. So that's certainly one argument. That's a good one. That's a good pickup in the text. What else?
He says God has uncovered the iniquity. He points to.
Yeah. Okay. So you're on the right track. So why is that?
Because God's the only one that knows their original sin as far as the situation.
Yeah. They certainly don't need God to discover the cup. They found the cup. Okay, so it's something that's been uncovered and something that God has seen. Okay, so that's two. That's good. You guys are good. There's one more argument. Okay, second is the plural, your servants. What's the third argument?
He
This is kind of the definitive one. This answers the problem that you raised, Betty, which is, says servants plural. Yeah. So how is Benjamin accepted from that other iniquity in the text?
Well, he wasn't there.
I know he wasn't, but how do we know? How do we know from the text that they know he wasn't, and they're not including him?
They separate themselves by saying both we and the one.
Ah, there you go. Notice that we plural,
right.
And the one. Which one?
Benjamin.
Well, it doesn't say his name. The one with what?
Possession.
In possession of the cup. Okay, now, it's interesting. This is one time when the original language is very helpful. This is a very specific construction. It's gotten very clear. It says we, specifically, and also the one. Okay, so you see it in the context. So that's good. You guys picked it up. That's excellent. That's not an easy one to see. So three clues, right? God certainly didn't need to expose this. It's already exposed. Number two, the plural servants. But then you get to that very question you raised. Well, wait a minute. How's Benjamin in this? He wasn't there. Well, obviously, he then clears that up right in the last part of the clause. We and the one. Okay? So what I think we're seeing here is that that we and the one, a very specific question. I went through all this stuff. Okay? They'll be responsible for their prior iniquity, and Benjamin will be responsible for his iniquity, which was what? Taking a cup, which was placed in his bag. It's a setup, okay? But that's the iniquity he's going to be held responsible for. So, really interesting section. Now, reminding us of an important implication, right? And that there is none righteous, not even one. So let's just go look at it in Psalms, and it gets cited in Romans. But turn to Psalm 14. Psalm 14. Psalm 14 and verses 1 to 3 say this. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So, Bobby and Betty, there's your answer to your, well, what shouldn't they know? Shouldn't they know? Shouldn't they know? Yes, they should, but they're fools. Okay? So, in their heart, they've said there is no God. All right? Now, they are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. There is no one who does good. The Lord has looked down from heaven upon the sons of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside. Together they become corrupt. There's no one who does good, not even one. Of course, we know that's cited by Paul in Romans chapter 3. But, you know, it's just it's a good reminder and a good implication. So, you know, we're none of us are righteous. Now, what is Joseph doing in verse 17? What's going on in verse 17? What's Joseph doing? Just look at the obvious. Yeah. Yes, far be it from me to do this, okay? I'm not going to kick you all slaves. That's not the deal I made, okay? So the first thing he's doing is he's honoring the penalty he set forth, right? He said, I'm not going to take you all, but instead of killing him, we're going to take the one who has the cup, and he's become a slave, okay? Now, so that's kind of the first part, but something more important in that, what is he doing? Absolutely, man. He is tightening the noose. He is putting the noose so tight around these guys' neck. What is he doing? Exactly what Bobby said. He's giving them a chance to throw Benjamin under the bus.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Hey, you guys, no problem. Head on back. Benjamin's the guy. Go ahead, Matthew.
I think he shades that, though, because he mentions the dad. They know exactly what the scoop is. I think that's true.
Tell me where are you saying that, Matthew?
He says, go up in the 17. He could have stopped there, but he didn't say that. He said, go up in peace to your father.
Yeah.
Well, Benjamin is the tender one in the father's heart. And so
yeah.
They know all that.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of greasing the skids. So
yeah.
That, yeah, they're going to be hard of heart.
Right.
It's going to be simply because they totally reject everything.
Absolutely right. But he's tightening that noose. He's giving them a chance. And then he's giving them this little subtle reminder. That's a good pickup. I didn't see that in the end. Okay. So he's giving them a subtle reminder. Yeah, go back up in peace to your father. They're like, oh, man, it ain't going to be peaceful. Okay? But he is tightening the noose. I mean, he is giving them a chance to demonstrate where they are, and then he is giving them a little clue. That's a good add, I think, to the end of it, which is, hey, don't lose sight of the fact that you go to peace. Yeah, Jack.
Is there also just that obvious point of, you know, way back when they had sold Joseph into slavery?
Right.
And they would have given an opportunity now to basically sell Benjamin.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. I mean, what's the parable of the landowner? right? Send this guy, kill him, send this guy, kill him. I'll send him my son. Surely that won't be a problem. Kill him. Hey, what's their reaction? Hey, we got the kid. Kill him. We got it. No problem. So, yeah, absolutely. You got a similar parallel here where they could go through that process. So he's tightening the noose, okay? That's a reading device. He's tightening the noose, and he is also, I think that's, I like the addition there, and it turns to the end, go up in peace to your father, which is, you know, he's almost being cynical, right? I mean, yeah, go ahead, head on back up in peace to your father, okay? Interesting. All right, so the conditions for betrayal are right before them. Joseph knows where Judah stands, but not probably definitively where the other brands. I mean, Judah is speaking corporately for the group, okay, but not the thing. So divinely orchestrated for sure and brilliantly executed by Joseph. So verse 17 here is the hinge of the chapter. And now we're going to proceed to this impassioned plea, okay, in verses 18 to 34. I wasn't sure how far I was going to get today. And let me just kind of introduce this. And I don't want to race through it because it really is kind of a masterful plea that he makes here, or appeal that he makes in the end of the process. So 1 to 17 has been all about setting it up. Okay, so he's setting up this final test. He's got him right where he wants him to do. They have the choice now. There is no way that he's not going to genuinely see where the brothers stand at this point in time. Okay, so as we move into here, 18 to 34 are the heart of the chapter. And what they capture is a dramatic and extended plea voiced by Judah, an appeal for mercy made to the supreme ruler of the land. Now, this actually helps Matthew's point and actually is a better answer to the question that I have, which is what precipitates the appeal? What precipitates the appeal? I mean, why does he make this appeal now to Joseph? You got it. They ain't no way he's going to go in peace, or they're going to go in peace to their father. Okay? No way. All right? Because of that. So his father's love for Benjamin and the impact of the incarceration, you know, in effect, don't hasten my father's death. Okay? So, again, I like that. I wish I'd picked that up. You made me mad, Matthew. But thank you for the addition. Good addition. What's that? Yeah, we'll hold that. You get credit for that one. But it's good. It does perfectly work it through to the process. I can't go in peace. What precipitates it? They know this is going to be anything but peaceful as they're going back to their father. Okay? So we're kind of then left right here. And the bottom line is, what do we begin to see in the appeal? Specifically, Judah's love for his father and genuine care for the needs of someone other than himself. Okay, so this is the first time. Just take today's sermon, right? They're not going to act in self-will. They're going to act selflessly as they start to move through the process. Okay? So I'm going to stop here. And what I'd like you guys to do is think about, read the appeal, okay, this appeal. Kind of think of this first question, what's absent in the appeal? And then see if you can kind of see a logic in how he's making his appeal, right? So it's like he's making final arguments before the judge. And in making his final arguments, he's kind of proceeding through some stages in that. So see if you can kind of pick out the stages of what they are. And then fundamentally, see if you can pick out what he's trying to do in the appeal. He's trying to change the focus in the appeal. So see if you can see where he's trying to change the focus from and what he's trying to change the focus to. Okay?